We are in lesson number 32. It is Vision 13. The scripture is going to open up in verse 1 of chapter 40 and say this. It says, in the 25th year of the exile. Well, that's easy. It tells us that Ezekiel's been in exile for 25 years. It just so happens we know that he went into exile in 597 B.C. We knew that. We've already studied that. And he's in his 25th year. And he goes on to say this. At the beginning of the year, which means at the first month of the year, on the 10th of the month, which means the 10th day of the month, in the 14th year after the city was taken. So now we have an added fact. We could have figured out the 25th year was 572 B.C., but now that we know it has been 14 years since the city was taken, Jerusalem was taken by Nebuchadnezzar, we can do that math too. We know the city was taken in 586, you minus 14 years, you're at 572. So we have two factors that prove we know we're in 572 B.C. Well, it has been 13 years since Ezekiel and the Lord wrote down Vision 12. 13 years have passed. Ezekiel has been living by the Chebar River 13 years since he's heard from the Lord. And the Lord perks up and says and comes to Ezekiel to give him another vision, another message. So we're in 572 B.C. What has happened in 572 B.C.? What is going on? Well, some of the things that have been prophesied in Ezekiel in the past visions are occurring. You remember we talked about Pharaoh Hophra, who had a general by the name of Amasis. And the general and the people were not happy with Hophra because he had tried to do two campaigns that were a failure and the people were dying. Egyptian army was being killed. And so Pharaoh Hophra was on the run from General Amasis, who was his general, who was attacking him and trying to capture him and trying to kill him so he could be Pharaoh. We studied that in Ezekiel. We also know in this very same year that Nebuchadnezzar is in his last year of attacking the city called Tyre. He's going to defeat Tyre, and then he's going to roam up about 20 miles, and he's going to destroy the city of Sidon, and then he's going to march right back down through the empty land of Israel around to the delta of the Nile River, and he's going to start going up the Nile River, taking Egyptian exiles and putting them in labor over off the Red Sea to dig a channel from the Red Sea up to the Mediterranean Sea, because for the last 11 years, he's been up at Tyre. 13 years, he's been up at Tyre attacking the city and, by the way, cutting down all the cedars of Lebanon, because he's looking at these cedars and saying, I need those over in Babylon to help build the hanging gardens in my palace and everything he'd planned on. So he's gone into Egypt. He started taking exiles. And these exiles don't go over to be with Ezekiel. These exiles go over about 25 to 40 miles to start digging this canal so that they can float those logs down from Tyre and up in the Cedars of Lebanon area, down the Mediterranean and on down through the Dead Sea and down around to the Indian Ocean and back up into the Persian Gulf so that he can run them up the Euphrates, because it's easier to float them on land, even though it might take longer, than it would be to carry them on, float them in the water than it would be to carry them on land. That's all happening. Amasis is down, the Pharaoh Hophra is down about where what we'd call the Aswan Dam is today. That dam was not there yet. That Aswan Lake was not there. It's just the runoff of the mountains is causing the stream. It's going to come in, become the Nile River as it goes on down. Amasis is up there. Hophra is up there. Amasis in two more years is going to catch up with Pharaoh Hophra and kill him. And if you remember, the prophecy is and fulfilled. The people are going to ask for his body, ask for him. They're going to just do everything terrible to the body, and he'll be embalmed. And that's the Pharaoh Hophra, and Amasis is going to become the Pharaoh. So we got lots of things are fulfilling. And for some reason, the Lord says, okay, now listen, in that last vision, in Vision 12, I told you about 13 years ago, I told you about the salvation of Israel. I gave you the example of how she's going to rise from her spiritual death like the valley of the dry bones. I've told you about the battle that's going to take place that's going to cause Israel to realize that they need to put their trust in the Lord. And then I've told you about a great sacrificial feast that I am going to do, because you see that battle with that guy by the name of Gog. I'm going to call the swords of other nations to come and destroy Gog and his folks and his armies. But there's going to be another thing that's going to have to happen to that. And I'm going to have some birds and some beasts to come and clean up what I'm going to do with my sword. So we got this picture of the salvation of Israel coming into place. And now, 13 years later, he says, okay, I want to tell you about the last thing. I've been telling you that the nation of Israel is going to be the premier nation of the world. Let me tell you about when it's going to happen and what Israel's going to look like. So it's 13 years later, and the Lord is about to tell Ezekiel about the throne and the whole area around Jerusalem where the Lord is going to stay when he arrives here at his second coming and destroys Armageddon and all of that. And he's going to stay in this temple area that's going to be in place for 1,000 years. We're not going to get down to it this week. We'll get to it next week. But inside this place called the Holy of Holies that he's fixed, that's going to be built, he's going to explain, is going to be his throne that he's going to be sitting on, which, by the way, is the great white throne where the Lord's going to sit for 1,000 years. Now, so we've got this vision 13, and it is a vision. And in fact, the Lord Ezekiel says about this day, this 10th day of the first month of this 25th year, he says this: on that very same day, the Lord was upon me and he brought me there. Brought me where? Brought me to look at the promised land in Jerusalem that he's just talked about in the last vision 13 years before. And he says, in the visions of God, he brought me into the land of Israel and set me on a very high mountain. And on it to the south, there was a structure like a city. Okay, this is a vision. Ezekiel is still in his tent on the Chebar River. He has gone nowhere in his body. This is a vision. Just like the vision of going and seeing Jerusalem and all the terrible people were there and all the other visions, Ezekiel is having a daydream. And he sees himself with the Lord on this high mountain north of Jerusalem, because he says he's looking to the south. Did you catch that? He's looking to the south and he sees this structure down there. And I love this. He sees this structure and he says this: so he brought me there, and behold, there was a man whose appearance was like the appearance of bronze. Okay, if you take a piece of copper or bronze and you polish it up and look at yourself in that mirror, which is the way they did to begin with, they didn't have glass, your picture, you are going to look yellow. Did you get that? Because you're going to have a bronze or a yellow color to you. He says, appearance was like bronze, and with a line of flax and a measuring rod in his hand, and he was standing in the gateway. Well, it just so happens that we have visuals today. We always have visuals, but now we've really got visuals. So Thursday night, I decided y'all needed to see where the gateway was. So I went out to my garage and took about 4 hours to build you an entry gate to where this man's going to be standing. And so here, sitting on the piano, we have a replica to scale, by the way, of what the Lord has designed in this lesson, which is the entry gate to this holy, wonderful place where the Lord's temple is going to be. But this is just the front gate. So before I talk about this, let's go to my map. This map is a picture to scale, by the way. Every 4.5 inches equals 87 feet 6 inches in reality. You got that? This is a perfect square. It is 875 feet from the inside of this wall to the inside right there of this wall. in between the second line and the second line is 875 feet. Same thing going this way, 875 feet. This is a big place, okay? And around this temple, which we're going to find out as we're reading through, there are three outer gates. There's the eastern gate. The eastern gate. There's the southern gate. There is the northern gate. Here is a replica to the dimensions of all three of those gates. All right. Ezekiel is looking from the north and he sees standing in that eastern gate. He's up here and he's looking down and he sees standing right there, or as we might say, standing right here in this gate, he sees a man there that looks kind of bronze looking, and he sees him and he's holding a line of flax. Now, I did not bring a cord or anything, so let me use this. Let me play like this is a line of cord. He's line of flax. Now, what do you do with this on a job site? Well, whenever I was building Danbury, I had a plumb line in my tool bag all the time. Because with this, I can hang it and I can tell whether the wall is hanging straight or not. I can pull it. I can mark things. I can put chalk on it. I can snap it and draw a straight line with the line. I can just do lots of things with this line of flax. It also says that he had in his hand a rod. And you see up there the picture. You see a rod. It just so happens that we also have a rod. Here is a rod right here. This rod is the exact length that is described that this man is going to be holding. It's just so sad. I can't stand it up because I need 6 more inches on this ceiling to stand it up. But you get the picture, all right? We'll discuss this a little more in just a minute. Next verse says this, verse 4. And the man said to me, "Son of man, see with your eyes." In other words, watch. Watch what I'm doing. Hear with your ears. Listen up, buddy. That's what he's saying. Look. Listen and give attention to all that I am going to show you. So this man standing in that gateway there, in that place, in that opening, that entryway to that port, to that gate, is saying, I want you to look, I want you to listen, and I want you to watch what I'm doing. For you have been brought here for a purpose in order to show it to you. I am supposed to show you everything about this temple area that's going to be built. Declare to the house of Israel all that you see. In other words, I'm going to measure it. You're going to watch me measuring it. As I'm measuring it, you're going to write it down. And then you're going to go back when you get out of this vision and you're going to declare it to the house of Israel. Now, if you will remember, I've said it many times through the study of the book of Ezekiel. This book has two stories running through it. One is the life of Ezekiel after his call. But the other is the life of the nation of Israel from before it was born on the land, before who controlled the land before, being the Canaanites, who controlled the place called Jerusalem before David came and took it to be his capital, all the way through to the end times when the Lord is going to have, after his second coming, this temple complex built on that place called Jerusalem. By the way, there is no place in Israel today that this complex that we're going to discuss this week and next week can sit, because the land, it just doesn't fit on the land. But when the Lord touches down his toe on Mount of Olives, which is where he left from when he ascended into heaven, there's going to be an earthquake, and the land's going to begin to move north and south, and this great high mountain is going to rise that's going to be flat on the top. And that big high mountain that's flat on the top is going to be just perfect for this huge complex. In other words, there's going to be a miracle on the day the Lord sets his toe back on the Mount of Olives. And he says this, he says, "And behold, There was a wall all around the outside of the temple, all around, and in the man's hand was a measuring rod of 6 cubits, each of which was a cubic and a handbreadth. So he measured the thickness of the wall, 1 rod, and the height, 1 rod. Okay, so let's first off, let me bring back my rod. Here's his rod. You notice I've got little black marks. Each black mark is a cubic long. You can count them. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. This is a cubic long. I hope I don't hit you in the nose over there, but if I do, just wipe the blood off, all right? Okay. So, in other words, here's what's going to happen. I'm going to lay that right there. I'm going to come back here because I made this separate on purpose. This is a replica to scale of the wall that is around the entire complex. So as we look up on my example, this little double line that goes all the way around is this wall. It is, do it this way so we can look at it. It is 1 cubic or 10 feet 6 inches tall and 1 rod or 10 foot 6 inches wide. It's a complete square. You see that? And it runs all the way around the perimeter, this outside wall of this entire complex. And of course, we've got a gate open area right there. And this, it also has, we're not going to find it out yet, but it's going to have 7 steps that lead up to the level from this entry gate. That entry gate is there. He goes on to talk about it. He says, okay, but it's a cubic. So we have to discover, what is a cubic? Before 1889, if you read in any of the commentaries before 1889, the commentaries are all over the map on what a cubic is. Some say it's 16 inches, some say it's 17, some say it's 17 and a half, some say it's 18, some say it's 19. Then you get mixed up into, okay, is it an Egyptian cubic or is it a Hebrew cubic? Because if it's an Egyptian cubic, it's 24 inches. Unless it's a royal Egyptian cubic, then it's 29 inches. And then if it's a Babylonian cubic, it's 23, blah, 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 blah. You see what I'm saying? All over the world, they had all different measurements. And we have found examples of these cubic rods are used for measuring, for building projects on all different sizes. And so we struggle with what are the exact measurements of this complex and the entire complex. The great thing about it is it really doesn't matter what the measurement is, as long as whatever the cubic is, it is the standard and you do all the measurements off the cubic. And I'll explain that in just a minute. As you look up here on the board, and you also I'm going to show you a picture on the screen, the standard cubic for the Hebrew was from the elbow to the middle finger of the average man, okay? And so what they would do is when they came up to a building project, they would pick a man. It doesn't matter who the man is. They would pick a man. And they would take the man someplace, and he would put his hands and arm out on the place, and they would mark. They would mark the back, and they would mark the tip. That between those marks right there, that becomes the law of the build. You follow me? There it is. That's the law. In fact, you can even put that. It's kind of interesting how these words came to be. This is called the law. So an architect or a king or somebody, Moses could have done it because he used to do it too, and the drawings when he was a builder in Egypt, they would come along and the chief builder would come and he would pick somebody, maybe even himself. He would measure from here to here. He'd mark it on the wall. You got it marked on the wall. And it becomes the law. Okay? Then every craftsman would come and take a piece of wood, and they would come up to the law, And they'd put the piece of wood, and they would measure it. Did you notice how close that is? From the butt end right there out. From the point to the full. See that? I'll show you what this end is for in a minute. And they would take, and everybody would match a stick that is their stick to the law. This then becomes the rule. You got it? This is the rule. This is the rule that you carry along in your pocket that fulfills the law. Some of you are ahead of me because you know what's coming. Now, while I'm here, most of the ancient cubits that we have found have a little back end on them right here. What's this for? Well, when you're going out to cut a stone, you've got an edge on the stone, and I'm going to go over here as an example. I'm about to lay my phone down, but what you, my microphone down. But what you do is you put this on the edge, and you go out to whatever marking you want. And you mark a line with an edge like this. Three-quarter. Got it? For those of you who've always wanted to know how I draw straight lines on the board, I've been doing this every time. I come over here, I get my ruler. I measure out where I want to be from the top, and I run the ruler across the top and draw the straight line. That has been going on ever since man began building and Noah built the ark and probably before. Okay. So this is the rule for the law. When they went to build something, there were multiples of these, but a person might say, can I borrow your ruler? This is your ruler. Did you catch it? That's where those words came from. This was then transferred back to the king. The king was the one who made the law. Therefore, the king is our rule, who is our ruler. You following? Okay. All right. But in the scripture, this is a... By the way, this is really easy to do. It doesn't matter. I put this under my arm. I'm going to do this. It doesn't matter how long that marking is. Doesn't matter. It's all relative. If you're going to do a full cubic or a full rule, you just do the full rule. Boom. But if you want a half a rule, you take your string, you divide it in half, and you, maybe to go the other side, and you mark your half mark. You see that? If you want a quarter of a rule, you just divide it in half again, and you mark your quarter of a rule. You see that? And then you do the same thing to get your eighths, and then you keep dividing the string in half to get your 16th. So everybody's ruler is exactly the same, even though they all took one marking. You follow that? One marking. But our scripture says something different. It wasn't a cubic by itself. It was a cubic plus a hand breadth. What's a hand breadth? It's the width of the hand. So it's a cubic. Got it? See the cubic? Plus a hand breadth. Now this will really throw you off because you've got a cubic and a hand breadth and you see the halfway mark. See the halfway mark? And you put it up next to the cubic with the halfway mark, and they don't match, do they? Do you know why they don't match? Because it's not the same distance. A half of a longer cubic is not the same as the half of a shorter cubic. This is what they were going to go by. And by the way, this is what they went by. And how do we know? We happen to know that because we happen to know what this is. Because in 1889... in a tunnel called Hezekiah's Tunnel in Jerusalem. Now, who was Hezekiah? Well, he's the Hezekiah's in Isaiah. And Hezekiah had this northern Assyrian kingdom who was trying to come take them over when they were taking over the northern kingdom. Hezekiah's in the southern kingdom in Jerusalem. And Hezekiah said, boy, if that Assyrian king comes after us, we can lock ourselves up in Jerusalem, but if we lock ourselves up, we don't have any water because we don't have any wells inside the city limits. So we need to get some water, some fresh water into this city. So Hezekiah had some men go down and dig a pond area that is going to become known as the Pool of Siloam. And he's going to have a group of men start where they're digging that hole, and they're going to start digging from inside the city, inside the wall, towards the Gihon Springs, which is just northeast of the city of Jerusalem. And he puts a group of men at Gihon Springs digging towards the Pool of Siloam that they're digging. This way, two groups digging. And we can look into those tunnels. We've had these tunnels ever since. I mean, we've had it. There's one picture on the left that you see there is pretty well, but it's going headed down, and it's not very wide. And if you'll notice the picture on the right, you'll notice that it's kind of curvy because the men who were digging it, they're digging through rock, dirt and rock. And so when they found a way to go around the rock, they dug through the dirt instead of digging through the rock. And so there are places in this tunnel where it literally goes like this as it's digging down, and it's all going downhill towards the Pool of Siloam that's being dug. It is a miracle to me in the days of Hezekiah, when they are digging down underneath the ground, that the men at the Pool of Siloam can be digging like this, and from the Gihon Springs, they can be digging like this, and they dig like this and end up there. Amazing. Just amazing. Because they've got dirt and rock and everything above them. Now, some places going down this tunnel, which you can go down this tunnel, well, if it's the water's low, you can go. There are some places where they were so confined by the rock that they dug through the rock, and it's about this wide, and it's about this tall, about 4 feet tall, about this wide. And there are some places where, as they were digging to get the dirt out so they could have fresh water instead of muddy water, they dug down as far as 100 feet. So the ceiling is literally as high as 100 feet above you. In some places, it's low as 4 feet, and you're having to scrunch down to go through. Okay, this tunnel has been with us forever. And for those who wrote commentaries prior to 1889, they don't even know that this tunnel of Hezekiah can tell us what the Hebrews thought was a cubic. In 1889, as they're going through the tunnel, they look up, and they discover some scribbling about halfway where the men met. And on that scribbling on the wall, they look up, and you can't hardly read it, but it's there. By the way, that piece of that stone has now been taken off that wall. You can't see it today in Israel because it's in a museum in Istanbul, is where it is, in a museum in Istanbul. Down on the fifth and sixth lines, it's interesting because the fifth line says this: then the water began, talking about how they met up, and the water began to flow from the source to the pond, from the Gihon Springs to the Pool of Siloam, a distance of 1,200 cubits. Well, how long is 1,200 cubits? It's 1,800 feet long. Divided by 18 is 1,200 cubits. Got it. So they're counting that whole entryway tunnel with all its turns by the short cubic, the 18-inch cubic. Goes on to say, and 100 cubics was the height of the rock above the head of the stone cutters. Well, it just so happens that in the lowest part of that tunnel, the ground level, which is also going down with the tunnel, by the way, it's all going down because you got to have the water flowing down, is exactly 100 cubics at 18 inches per cubic above the floor. The ground level, which is above the rock that is below their feet. So the tunnel doesn't show. You follow me? Because the tunnel's in the ground. That inscription is exactly correct, and it tells us that their cubic was 18 inches. 18 inches plus a handbreadth for our cubic for the millennial temple, and 6 cubics equal a rod. Ezekiel has seen this man standing right there in the middle of that entryway, which is where I showed you a while ago, and he's standing there and he's measuring, and he's measured the side of this outer wall that I just showed you. The scripture says in verse 6, and then he went to the gate, which faced east, and he went up the steps. Oh, we got steps. We don't know how many yet, but we'll find out later at 7. And he went to measure the threshold of the gate. One rod in width, and the other threshold was one rod in width. Now, when you go through your door at your house, you have to do what we call you step over the threshold. So you've got, here's your door, visuals. You're going to open the door. Open the door. Does your squeak? Mine does. And I could fix it. I just never do. And down at the bottom of where the door is, there's a metal plate or a wooden plate that's kind of angled out. And that's your what we call the threshold. But that wasn't the threshold back in those days. The threshold was the sides of it. And in fact, your threshold at the bottom of your door is about the width of your wall. Okay? So they're measuring the width of the wall. So this man who has measured, we're going to go over here again, this man who has measured the size of this outer wall is now standing right here in this entry gate, and he's measuring the depth here of the threshold on both sides. And he says, okay, they're both a rod wide. So what we're doing is we're coming up to a column here, and this column is a square going up. I'll go ahead and tell you, it's 105 feet high. How high is 105 feet? Okay, when you're out on our parking lot and you're looking at this building and the worship center that sticks up above, the top of that worship center is 50 feet. So you multiply it times 2 and add 5 more feet, 60 cubics high, 105 feet. And they're one rod wide and one rod deep. These are big columns. They're big. Oh, I'm using the wrong word. These are big pillars. Okay. In Ezekiel, pillars, and he calls them a pillar, are square. Columns are round, and we're going to need that information at the end of this lesson. And he says this. The guard room, oh, he's gone past the threshold, and he's coming to a guard room. He says the guard room was 1 rod long and 1 rod wide, and there were 5 cubics between the guard rooms, and the threshold of the gate on the other end of the gate facing inward was 1 rod. Okay, so now we're back to our little thing here. I'm going to get rid of this. Put it over here so we can do a little show and tell. Hope I don't scratch the top of the piano. Okay. So the man is measuring from the inside. He's measuring going this way. This is 1 full rod deep. And then you have a guard room here that is 1 full rod deep. So it's the same measure at both places. And then you have right here's the rod room, guard room. And then you have an open space of 5 cubics or 8.5 feet. And then you have another 8.8 feet, 9 inches. And then you have another guard room. And then you have an open space. And you have another guard room. And then you have this another column with another pillar with 2 little smaller columns on the outside. It's interesting because this is the door. The door is out here to the guard room. The door is not on the inside. The door is on this side. There's a little border down here at the bottom, if you come by and look at this, there's a barrier wall. And this thing's got shutters in it. In fact, I made the shutters. You can see some of them are closed, okay? See them closed? Shutters. You remember, we have shutters on the outside of our windows, but they do nothing. Well, before we had glass, those shutters actually worked because they shut off the window at night, kept you from the cold. So that's the word that's being used here for Ezekiel, because Ezekiel, they don't have glass windows. So they cover the windows with what they call shutters or window doors. So we've got the little window doors, and I even put them where they would kind of spin around a little bit. You see that too? Okay. It's interesting because this platform area runs all the way out both directions, as it does right here, and covers 875 feet. And we're right here. Here's what we're talking about. Here's a little guard gate, and here's a little opening in a guard gate, and a guard room, and an opening a guard room, and then pillars on either side. Follow me? The guards are able to walk in and out from this porch area going in and out. The entry area that walks straight through, you just walk through and you can look over. Sometimes the door shutters are open. Sometimes they're closed. But you can go and come through these little exits. So you could go in the entry gate and go right off to go this way. You could go in the entry gate, come on this way. Entry gate, and then you could come out to the porch area, the front porch. I've got to throw that off there, aren't I? The front porch area and go out that way. So we've got these guard rooms. We've got three of them. It's fixing to tell us that. He says, then he measured the porch. Now, I know I call this the porch. It's called the pavement in what we're doing, but I'm calling it the porch area because it's all the same level, all the same way around. Let me take you over here. And for those of you, let me move this back so you can see. The video on this is going to be really bad. You know that, don't you? Okay. Okay. Let's do it from this way, because it's the eastern gates what we're talking about first. You come in from the east, and there are seven steps that lead up to this level. Here's the porch. That's that right there, sitting right there, is right there. Then at the end of the porch, you'll see I have another set of steps on the end of this open porch area that are going to lead up to another level. And that level leads up to this level right here. This level, to scale, by the way, is 100 cubits or 175 feet. That's this outer court level right here that goes all the way around on three sides, 175 feet or 100 cubits. Then, when you get to this side, right here, all the little green marks are steps. There's another set of seven steps that leads up to another gate right here. Here's that gate. Now, that porch side, as it sits right there, is right here on this one. But when you get to the inner gates, they're turned around. In other words, this open port right here is going to be on the coming up the step side. And the reason for that is there's going to be tables there to do your sacrifices on when you reach it. So just to put this in perspective for you, here we go. This is the eastern gate. Coming from the east, we come up the steps into this gate. At the back end, on the far end, there's a porch. That porch happens to be 14 feet wide. Got it? Okay. This gate sits like this here, with the 14-foot porch at the back. But when you come to the inner gate, which is this gate right here, it now sits like this with the 14-foot porch on the back, on the front side. You see it? Am I losing everybody? I got you. 14-foot porch here, 14-foot porch here. Here's the 14-foot porch. You follow me? Okay? The opening. Why? Because right here, when you're coming in this same gate, which happens to be the same size here, there are two tables on this side and two tables on this side. Or if you're coming in this way, your two tables here, two tables here. You come into the porch and go to either side to present your offering for it to be sacrificed. Okay? Whew, boy, that was tough. So if you look up at the screen, you see that 14-foot wide porch area, which is open, with steps going up. But when you get to the inside, the steps are turned around. Instead of being, I'm going to play like we're down there, instead of being going up to a level, the level goes up like this. In other words, these steps are going up right here inside this one, but here they're outside going up. Boy, that was a lot of work. Okay, so going on, it says this. The guard rooms of the gate towards the east, numbered 3. So we've got 3 guard rooms. I also can use this to show you as an example. When you go by that big 1 rod by 1 rod pillar that starts when you're going in, that'll be about, in scale, would be this size, okay? Because it's 1 rod by 1 rod. When you come around and you're coming down, you're going to come to a guard room that's shaped like this, okay? This is the door that is facing out right here. This is 1 rod by 1 rod. This is the door where the soldier will stand and watch what's going out onto the court. So the guard rooms, there's 3 on each side. And each of the 3 sides, the 3 of them had the same measurements. The side pillars also had the same measurements. So this, all these pillars and everything are all the same. It is one standard. Here's the standard, 6 cubits. Every one of the rooms are the same. He said, then says this, there was a barrier wall, 1 cubit wide in front of the guard room. On each side of the guard rooms were 6 cubits square on each side. All he's telling us is that this guard room is 1 rod wide and deep. And right here on the inside, which is going to be a door, shutter doors, there is a little wall, a barrier wall, that's at the bottom that these windows or these doors are going to rest on. Because you don't go and come from the guard room from the entryway, which is in the middle. You go and come from the guard rooms from the outside, once you've gone all the way through and come on the way on the back through. He goes on to say this. And he measured the gate from the roof of one guard room to the roof of the other, a width of 25 cubits from one door to the door opposite. You know, when you're just reading these numbers, it's real difficult, isn't it? Okay, let me make it simple for you. I can make this simple. What he's saying here is this. Start at the door of a guard room right here and measure to the door of the guard room right here, but we're measuring the roof. We're not measuring the doors between the doors. We're measuring from the door to a door how big the roof is. And this roof is 25 cubits wide or 43 feet 9 inches. You got it? That's all that means. It's a lot of words. Why don't you just say it like that, okay? Thank you, Ezekiel. He made the side pillars 60 cubits high. The gate extended around about the side pillars of the courtyard. What's he talking about? Here we go. The pillars are 60 cubits high, 105 feet. That's all it means. That's it. Nice and simple. Don't struggle. And then from the front of the entrance gate to the front of the inner porch of the gate was 50 cubits. Okay. from here to here was 50 cubits. If it's 25 cubits this way and 50 cubits this way, and you take the roof and fold it in half, what you fold in half ends up a full perfect square. Do you see that? 25 and 25? This whole temple measurement all the way around is done with perfect measurements, starting from a cubit. It says this, "And he brought me into the outer court, and behold, there were chambers and a pavement made for the court all around. 30 chambers faced the pavement, and the pavement was by the side of the gates, corresponding to the length of the gates." Okay. "And he measured the width of the front of the lower gate to the front of the interior of the interior court, 100 cubits on each side and on the north." Okay, here we go, real easy. Let me interpret that in modern day English. "This outer porch, which is all the same level all the way around, is as deep as the gate is. It's the same depth. So over here, this is the outer porch area going this way and going the other way. It's the same length as this gate. Then he's got this outer court, which is right here, which is 100 cubits deep from here to here." That's what he's telling us, from there to there. It says, verse 20, "As for the gate of the outer court, which faced the north, he measured its length and its width. And it had the three guard rooms on each side." Now, we're talking about the north now. He's gone over here to talk about this one. He's finished with this one. He's talking about this one. "He's had three guard rooms on each side. And its porches had the same measurements as the first." In other words, this is exactly the same building. "Its length was 50 cubits and its width was 25. It's the same as that. So I'm not going to read the rest of this for you. Here's the reason why. Because all three of these gates, when we get down to it, this gate, this outer gate, and this outer gate are exactly the same with that 14-foot porch coming up to the inside, that big 14-foot porch. He reads next and he says this, "Now the inner court had a gate opposite the gate on the north side as well as the gate on the east, and he measured 100 cubits gate to gate." So from this set of steps to the end of this set of steps between the outer gate and the inner gate, that's 100 cubits, or in American, 175 feet. "Then he led me towards the south, and behold, there was a gate towards the south, and he measured the side pot pillars and its porches to the same measurements." I'm not going to finish that because it's going to say 50 cubits long and 25 cubits wide. So in other words, from this gate to this gate, this matches this, which matches this. You follow me? It's all the same. There's something symmetrical about the Lord. In other words, everything is made such that it is very logical and very precise. Why would the Lord be giving us these precise measurements for this temple that's still out in our future so that they would know how to build it? By the way, not going to get there today, in 45 days. They're going to build it in 45 days. "There were seven steps going up to it, and its porches were in front of them, and it had palm trees, ornaments, on its side pillars, on each side." Palm trees. Oh, I'm losing a window. It'll work. Palm trees on all the pillars all the way around. I broke that a while ago. I'm surprised it's holding together as much as I'm flinging it around. Seven steps. "And then the inner court had a gate towards the south, and he measured it, and I'm just going to go ahead and tell you, it's all the same. It's the same all the way around. And it goes on to talk about in verse 29, the guard rooms also, they're all the same. Everything, he's just repeating it. So we don't need to read it because it's being repeated. All six of the gates, whether they're inner or outer, are all the same. And then he goes on, he says, "Now there's a chamber," verse 38. "There's a chamber with its doorway by the side pillars at the gates. There they rinsed the burnt offerings. Oh, okay. We're going to find it out in the next verse. But they're going to bring in the offerings either from the north or from the south. And they're going to bring them up to this porch area that faces out here. And they're going to rinse them. They're going to rinse them. In other words, they're going to give the offering, be it a lamb, a goat, a cow, whatever it is, a bath. Going to scrub them down. Then they're going to take him to one of these four tables on either side, and they're going to do their business. And here it is. In the porch of the gate were two tables on each side, on which to slaughter the burnt offering, the sin offering, and the guilt offering. And on the outer side, as one went up to the gateway towards the north, were two tables, and on the other side of the porch were two tables. Four tables on each side of the next to the gate, or eight tables on which to slaughter the sacrifices. So there's four up here, and there's four down here. We don't know it in this lesson yet, but he's going to tell us that if you entered from the southern gate, you entered through the southern gate, walk across the court, went through the inner gate, slaughtered your animal, and then you proceeded through the inner court around and out through the northern gate. If you came through the north, you came all the way down and you went out. There was no going in and turning around and coming out the way you went. You always went forward, always went straight. He says this, but for the burnt offerings, there were four tables of hewn stone, a cubic and a half. So we have a cubic, which is this long, this is with a hand breadth, and a half a cubic. See how you measure it with a half a cubic? A cubic and a half wide and a cubic high. So these were this tall, minus that bottom, middle, bottom, this tall. And they were a cubic by a cubic, cubic and a half by a cubic all the way around, on which they laid the instruments with which they slaughtered the burnt offering and the sacrifice. Ooh, and here comes an interesting thing. And the double hooks, one hand breadth in length, so these double hooks were about the size across my hand, were installed in the house all the way around, and on the side tables was the flesh of the offering. So we take these hooks, and they're on these tables, and they're all the way around in this side house, so that once they slaughter the meat and have the hides and all that and everything, they can hang them until it's time, not put them on the ground, it's time for them to be used in the process of the offerings. Now, for us in modern day, if you're not a hunter, you don't understand the importance of these hooks. But if you're a hunter, you understand it. Because those of us who hunt, you take an animal and you hang them by these hooks to take the skin off. And that's what they're talking about. For the smaller animals, they do it right there on the small little tables. For the larger animals, they would go and hang them in around these walls, and that's where they would take the hides off of them or the skin. And from the outside of the inner gate were chambers for singers in the inner court, one of which was on the south of the north gate, and its front was towards the south. And one was on the south gate with its front towards the north. What he's telling us there's a chamber right here, boom, 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 a chamber right here. The one that on the north has its front towards the south. The one down here has the opening this way. These are chambers for priests, by the way. And he said to me, this is the chamber that which faces the south, intended for the priests which keep charge of the temple. But the chamber which faces the north is for the priests who keep charge of the altar. These are the sons of Zadok, who from the sons of Levi come near to the Lord to minister to him. So here's where the Zadok priests live and stay. This is where they work, not live and stay. This is where they operate from to take care of what's going on in the temple and to take care of what's going on around at the altar. We'll skip by that picture and we'll go to this. He measured the court, this middle court right here, between these gates. And he says it is a perfect square, 100 cubics, that's 175 feet long, and 100 cubics or 175 feet wide. And the altar was in front of the temple. In other words, Here's the temple coming up. We're not there yet. Right in the middle of this inner court, right in front of the temple, is the altar. This altar we'll describe and show you the measurements later. It says, then he brought me to the porch of the temple. Whoa, okay. So now we've come through the inner court and we're coming to a set of steps right here. I've not drawn the temple. We're just coming to the porch of the temple. And he says this. He brought me to the porch of the temple and measured each side pillar of the porch, 5 cubits on each side. And the width of the gate was 3 cubits on each side. And the length of the porch was 20 cubits. And the width was 11 cubits. And at the stairway by which it was ascended were columns. Columns are round. Pillars are square. Belonging to the side pillars, one on each side. So I've drawn it for you here. Visuals are wonderful. You come right through here and you head down to these set of steps. There's a set, we're going to find out, 8 steps that lead up. There's a pillar on this side which is 5 cubits. That's 8 feet 9 inches. There's a side pillar here that's 5 cubits. That's 8 feet 9 inches. It says that this side of this is also 8 feet 9 inches, so these are perfectly square. It tells us that beside each one of these pillars is a column that goes with each pillar. It tells us that this whole width of this gate, is, and I just went blank, 20 cubits. And it tells us the depth is 11 cubits. And he also tells us that on each side here, which I haven't got it drawn, there's a 3-cubic little gate on either side, of which no one ever goes through because this is an important place. And if you'll know, and what's behind this temple complex, you will not believe what's behind this temple complex. And I didn't draw it because it's for next week. Sorry, folks. Lord Jesus, we thank you for this time to study. What a wonderful thing it is going to be, because every one of us here who knows you as Savior, we're going to be in this place one day. And we're going to recognize it when we come back with you riding on our horses and we see this built and we take our jobs and positions. We will know the truth of you because you told us what this temple would look like, and it will stand for 1,000 years, and you will reign from this temple when you return to be the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords. And we thank you for that. In your name, amen and amen.